Good afternoon and welcome to Bear This and That. I'm your host, Cynthia DiLeonardo. We're going to explore the wants and true desires of successful relationships. I'm going to take you behind closed doors with one-on-one interviews with men and women from all walks of life on making relationships magical or not so much. And you know what? If you want to call in and you have an opinion and you want to jump in on this conversation, the number here is 610-664-4100. We have a very delicate topic to talk about today, and we're going to go into addictions. And we have talked a little bit about this topic in previous shows, but only this addiction is very, very different. This addiction is when you're addicted to drugs. So I am really, really fortunate to have as my guest today Laura Lee Rosano, and she is here with us, and she's a counselor for Edgewood Treatment Center, and she's also penned her life story, and it's called Jagged Little Lies. Laura Lee, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Cynthia. It's great to be on the show with you today.
Well, it is great having you. And you know what? This is a tough topic, and George is off today, but we've talked a little bit about addictions, but only this is different. So what I would like you to do is just give us a little history and what you're doing right now. I know you're a counselor at Edgewood Treatment Center, and you know, you've penned your book, and I have been fortunate enough to read a lot of your story in your book. But tell us what you're doing right now.
Sure. So maybe just before we get started, I'd like to kind of speak to anyone listening at the moment. What I want to say is I've got some real passion and energy and a little bit of anxiety around this topic, because this topic is a topic that really can change someone's life direction. It can save lives, and it can certainly help out families. Addiction thrives in secrecy and shame. And often we want to hide it, which only allows it to progress, turning into terminal stages. So I'm really excited if someone's out there and something that we're talking about today hits home, and perhaps they can look at this in a little different way. I know for me, I'm 17 years clean and sober now. And all the accumulation of those tragedies along the way has brought me to where I am. And so now it's a gift. Certainly back then it wasn't a gift at all. It was really tragic. So I think it is what we do with what's happening in our life today that will really promote success in the future. So I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be talking. I am a therapist at the Edgewood Treatment Center, and I've worked, first of all, before that, I should.
And you know what? I just want to interrupt very quickly, Laura Lee. Congratulations on your recovery. 17 years, you know, that's a lifetime. And I, you know, from what I've read, that was very difficult to do. And, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, you know, for the masses. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you. And you know what? I don't think I did it. My best thinking was killing me, and I'm not kidding. If I didn't have some people that made some really tough choices, I wouldn't be 17 years clean and sober. I think I would be 17 years in the grave. And so, hopefully in our talk today, we can start to take a look at some of those choices. Sometimes other folks have to kind of step up and be willing to do, because when we have someone who's clearly not able to make reasonable choices, we don't want to keep assigning them back that reason. So today I work at the center that I actually came through in 1997. I stepped through these doors. It was the last place I wanted to be. I came in about 98 pounds, scared and shaking, and my worst fear was that someone would see me cry. Because I had learned to shut down those emotions for a very, very long time, to numb them out and to really scorn them and be very impatient with them. So anything human about me, I kind of pushed away. And in 1997, in May of 1997, I came through these doors, basically with matching luggage because I had no, I was homeless. I didn't have any suitcases. I had two overweighty bags with enough clothes to last 3 days, and that was all I was planning on staying. And then I was going to be out of here, right? But thank goodness someone saw through that, and for the first time I actually couldn't manipulate anyone, and, mm-hmm. and that's a huge part of addiction is the manipulating that goes on, you know, and the people that fall prey to it. So I think when
it's you, folks aren't aware that they're manipulating. It becomes a lifestyle. But, you know, yeah. What I would like to do, Laura Lee, is where did this all start? You know, how did this start with you? How old were you when you realized that there were some issues going on?
Yeah, I think it started in utero. Addiction really is a genetic illness, you know, and when we get the color of our eyes.
We have talked about that.
Yeah.
The addiction gene. Okay.
That's right. And so mm-hmm. when we get the color of our eyes, we perhaps get this gene. I don't know. I knew when I was born. You know, and my dad's an alcoholic, and my grandfather was an alcoholic, and my sister's an alcoholic, and, you know, my kids have struggled with it. So, you know, it really is a family illness, but you would think it was the drinking or drugging that was the problem, but that's actually the solution to the problem.
That's right. To hide everything else that's going on, that's always, a vice, you know, for people to be able to escape to.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
But as a young child, when you say that so much alcoholism ran in the genes and there was such a struggle within the whole family with yeah. dealing with alcohol,
yeah.
when did that issue start for you?
Well, I apparently had my first drink at two. My mom was out working and my dad was going to university. And so, I want to let people know when we say lots of alcohol, sometimes, you know, folks don't drink for weeks or months. It's just when they do, they really don't do it very well.
So would that be like a binge drinker?
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. binge drinkers. There's mm-hmm. all sorts of kinds of addiction too. So, you know, strangely enough, in our house, when my dad was drinking, it was a better house to be in. It's when he wasn't drinking that things were scary because he was very rigid. He had unrealistic expectations, and we all learned to walk on eggshells. Don't upset dad. And so our job became to placate him and to meet all his needs. Now, in a healthy family system, we can all get our needs met. In an alcoholic or addicted family, there's only one person getting their needs met, and that's the addict or alcoholic.
So would you say when dad was sober, you lived at home in fear?
When he was sober, we were tense. We were mm-hmm. anxious. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was as much fearful mm-hmm. as anxious. We were worried to, you know, you don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't want to upset
him. Well, afraid to get him angry.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. And so you develop a sense of anxiety very, very young. I remember as a girl, now I certainly didn't know it then, but I remember feeling very different. That's a big symptom if anyone's listening. If you feel different than other people, you know, chance or less than or not as good as, those are some big warning signs. And I like to say now, thinking back then, my skin never fit right. It really didn't. It didn't feel right on me. I think my first addiction really was never drugs and alcohol. It was pleasing.
So are you saying that you were addicted to other things, not just alcohol?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And if you think about what the definition of addiction means, in, you know, if I can define it very, very simplistically for you, is any mood-altering substance or behavior that has life-damaging consequences. Now, life-damaging consequences is when I try to meet the needs of a man who perhaps is abusive,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know that. I don't have any self-worth. I don't have any self-respect. And so I stay in relationships.
And sometimes you don't know that until... You're advanced in the relationship. You know, there's got to be some time that goes by, you know, because we all have hiccups in our relationships. And every time we have a hiccup, we can't say I'm in an abusive relationship, right? Because sometimes we don't really know what the definition is of a dysfunctional relationship. So we end up staying in these abusive relationships because we don't know really what is the true definition of a dysfunctional relationship. But I just want to be clear. You know, I asked you, you know, when did the drinking start? You said it too. What do you mean you started to drink
it
too?
Well, at two, my dad was babysitting, and apparently my mom had come home, and I was stumbling all over the place. She had thought I'd fallen and hit my head, but apparently I had drank in his double scotch. Now, most children, I don't think, would like the taste of that. I apparently drained the glass. Now, of course, I can't remember any of that. But she had thought something really horrible had happened to me because I was drunk, and she didn't know it.
Now, was he providing this to you?
No,
was this something
no,
that you were kind
not
of
at all. He was
grabbing dad's glass?
Down. Yeah. No, he put his drink down, and I drank it.
Okay. And how long did that last? Was that really the start?
No. That was, I think, a one-time incident, and I don't remember it. I do remember when I took my first drink, though. Apparently, it was at two. I don't remember that.
But and how old were you when you did start drinking?
Probably about 15.
Okay.
Yeah, about 15. And my girlfriends and I, you probably heard the term mix. My girlfriends and I kind of hit up our mom and dad's liquor cabinets, and we all took a little bit and poured it all together and started sipping it in the back alley. And something very different happened in my brain than happened in theirs.
So at 15, and how often was the drinking occurring?
Oh, you know, whenever, maybe once a month, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at that time, the relationship with your father was, what was it like at 15?
It was awful at 15. We were barely talking. There was a lot of shame. I had been choosing for the first probably 13 years of my life. I really tried to please him and walk on eggshells and do all of those things. After that, I decided, you know, that's not working and I'm not going to do this anymore. And I think what had happened without being aware is my anger was building and building and building. So I decided, and when we don't have an ability to debrief our emotions and talk about them in a healthy way, we will act them out. Of course, I'm completely
especially as an adolescent.
What's that?
Especially as a teenager.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's the only thing you know how to do when the positives aren't working.
Yes.
We go over to the negative side.
That's right. And when a girl grows up and doesn't have those emotional needs met by her father, guess what she's going to do when she's a teenager?
Right.
She's going to go looking to get those needs met by other men, and she's going to choose really unhealthy men.
So I wonder, Laura Lee, like I said, I've read a lot about you, but I just want to really open up this conversation broadly, you know, to the audience who perhaps have not, you know, done this reading. But
yeah.
You talked about that there was no support at home for you as a child. So at 15, that's great. You had friends. Were boys already being introduced to you at this time, 15? I mean, that is the normal time that our eyes start to open to the opposite sex.
I remember falling in love all my life. I'd see a boy and develop this mad crush, but I would never tell him. I would certainly never act on it, and I certainly wouldn't think they'd be interested in me. I had absolutely no
And you know what? That's normal.
Yeah, 15, that's right.
You'll fall in love 100 times, you know?
Yeah, and at 15, and this is normal too, my friends were my family, and I would have died for them gladly. You know, to me, it was really urgent that they liked me, and I remember making up stories for them because somehow on my own, I didn't feel good enough. So I felt it really necessary to over-exaggerate the importance of things and, you know, as if me, myself, was not enough. And certainly at 15, I was in relationships with men. As a matter of fact, at 15, I met one man who I had quite a serious relationship
with. And how old were these men?
My age, or maybe a year older.
So, but you said at 15.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. They weren't men. They were boys.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
And
I just want to be clear on that.
It's a big, significant
difference.
You know,
okay, so you had boyfriends at 15. You know, boys were...
I had one serious boyfriend at 15 who I lost my virginity to. We were together for a couple of years, and I became a teen mother.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I chose... not to give that child up for adoption. And you know, hindsight, that would have been the kindest thing I could do. But that little boy was born with a job, and his needs, you know, in my mind, you have to understand, I you know, at 17, I'm not a woman. I'm a little girl with wishful thinking.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, and we're a little girl for a long time, you know, from 17.
So. No real healthy life experience.
Was this the first boyfriend, Laura Lee,
yes.
The father of your child?
Yeah.
How was that relationship at 15? You know, because it started when you were 15.
Yeah.
Was it a good relationship?
Not at all. It was really abusive, but I didn't know what healthy relationships look like.
When you say it was abusive, and could you be specific about why do you say it was abusive?
Well, I got hit in it. I got sworn at. I got told I was a piece of shit. There was a lot of damage done. He was quite a serious drinker with a drug problem, you know, and I thought I was in love, and of course I didn't know what love was. So there was, and I'm sure I did my share of abusing on my part too. And what I mean by that is when we belittle people, that's verbal abuse. And, you know, so it's very, very emotionally damaging.
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt in that. And that's what I was saying a few minutes ago, is sometimes we really are not clear where the lines are drawn there.
No.
You know, is this just a bad fight? People will, you know, say some pretty harsh things, you know, when they're, you know, in an argument,
that's
in a fight,
right.
You know, it's, you know, I've been in that, and, you know, I think we could talk to anybody and say, you know, do you regret saying something, in the course of an argument that you will love to take back?
Yeah.
But what makes it abusive is when it's a repeated pattern of behavior that worsens over time. It does not get better. So is this what was occurring with your young boyfriend? Now, he was the same age as you.
Yes. Okay. Well, he was a year older than me, but mm-hmm. close. Yeah. And that's exactly what it was occurring at first. It was fun, you know.
And did anybody realize what was going on in this relationship?
No, because, you know, when you grow up in addiction, what you learn is don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel. So you certainly wouldn't be sharing with other people what is going on in your life. You would be keeping that very much to yourself. You become very self-reliant, and you don't really trust other people.
So you were not confiding in a good friend about what was going on in this relationship?
No. And I already knew. I had enough sense to know if I was confiding, they would be saying, well, why don't you leave? And that wasn't something I was prepared to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
at least not at that point. Certainly I was prepared to do that later on, but not at that point I wasn't. So, you know, we were young, it was a big party, and then I got pregnant, and then things changed.
Mm-hmm.
It was time to
mm-hmm.
stop the party, so.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, Laura Lee. We'll be back in a moment, and we'll continue on your life story with addiction and relationships. Back in a moment.
Novello Salon is here to help you get ready for summer. The time is now. Ladies and gentlemen, go into summer with confidence. Rid yourself of unwanted, embarrassing hair on any body part. Get hair gone. Make your appointment now with Novello Salon for laser hair removal, where they'll get you ready for summer. Visit NovelloSalon.com and sign up for their free VIP club and get $5 off your first visit. Novello Salon is located next to Limoncello Restaurant on Route 113 in Chester Springs. Call them today to get hair gone at 610-363-5777. Novello Salon, getting you ready for summer.
Hi, I'm Andrew Goodstein, and I'm the founder of Essential Edibles, and I've created a way to a healthier lifestyle. If you're looking to lose weight, have more energy, and an overall improved lifestyle, a healthy body is and always starts with detoxifying and cleansing our body of harmful and foreign toxins. These days, toxins hamper the immune system, causing premature aging, and contributes to illness and disease. The foundation of a healthy life, pure and raw energy, begins with our hygiene. If it is not digestible, it accumulates in our system. If you want to look younger, have more energy, and feel great, this two-week commitment to use this product is a huge step towards your health and well-being. The premium ingredients that are contained in this supplement are based upon an ancient Thai method of detoxification. If you follow this program and stick to your detox schedule, I promise you, you will see fabulous results. Go to EssentialEdibles.net and make the commitment to a healthier lifestyle now. EssentialEdibles.net.
Dr. Stephen Monaco, surgeon with the Foot Above Podiatry, literally changed my life several years ago. My toes, after years of wearing shoes for up to 15 hours daily, possibly the wrong shoes, were causing me incredible daily pain. Now, believe me, after years of stuffing my feet into the wrong shoes, I was very unhappy with just how unattractive my toes had become. To be completely honest, I found myself hiding my feet in closed shoes year-round, leaving my toes in even more pain. I realized I was in pain, I was embarrassed, so I became diligent in my research for the best surgeon of podiatry. I drove more than 50 miles away from home to Dr. Stephen Monaco, who is a board-certified podiatrist. His credentials are outstanding. However, so is his personable approach to all of his patients. He extended his very long day to accommodate my work schedule. He was caring and thorough from consultation to my recovery and surgery. He followed up throughout my recovery period. He was wonderful. His very personable approach to me filled me with the 100% confidence I needed in my surgery. I was not an easy case. My request for Dr. Monaco was to fix my feet and make them pretty. I am now pain-free and my feet are pretty. Change your life. Call Dr. Monaco at A Foot Above Podiatry at 610-446-1392. He'll change your life, too.
Hi, I'm Dr. Stephen Monaco with A Foot Above Podiatry. My specialty is podiatric medicine. I provide medical diagnosis and treatment of foot and ankle problems, such as bunions, heel pain, hammer toes, neuromas, ingrown toenails, warts, corns, and calluses. I also render care of sprains, fractures, infections, and diabetic foot care and all injuries of the foot, ankle, and heel. We provide full services on-site, from x-rays to emergency care. We also have our own state-licensed ambulatory surgery center on-site. All of our services are provided on-site and are very convenient for all of you. We have the highest expertise in all aspects of foot and ankle problems. Change your life. Call me, Dr. Monaco, at 610-446-1392 or go to afootabovepodiatry.net to schedule your appointment today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bear This and That. I'm your host, Cynthia DeLeonardo. Today we're talking about a very delicate and sensitive topic, addictions. Addiction and relationships. The number to call here is 610-664-4100. I am fortunate enough today to have Laura Lee Rosano, and she has penned a book, her life actually. It's called Jagged Little Lies. And Laura Lee lived that story, okay? She's 17 years into recovery, and she's now a therapist. Laura Lee, welcome back, and again, thanks for being here. Where we left off, we were talking about your boyfriend at 15, I guess a couple of years you dated. That was your first serious relationship, and 2 years down the road, there was a baby, yes?
Yeah, there was a baby who was born with a job, and his job was to love his mother because she was looking for someone to love her. And, you know, and I just want to say very clearly that my parents did the best they could. Mm-hmm. This isn't, you know, we never want... they did the best they could with what they knew, and that's what this show is all about. It's about educating folks so that maybe they will know more and do better. But, you know, both of them were young, and my mom was obsessed about my dad and worried. She had three little kids, and her job was to try and hopefully stop him from drinking. And he was, you know, in university with three little kids, and that's how he dealt with his pressure. So that family system did the best they could. But when children grow up in a system that meets the basic needs but not the emotional needs, what you have is folks that just really don't do well. They don't do well when they're entering society, they're not able to communicate their needs or get their needs met. And so they tend to look for people to do that for them and then blame them when they can't, because, of course, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Nobody can meet your needs but you. And if you don't have that really successful relationship with self, you certainly aren't going to have one with anyone else. So,
like all of our homes when we grow up, Laura Lee, everything seems peachy keen and normal, right?
Yeah.
And it's not until you do reach that teenage, those teenage years, you know, when you're starting to look at friends and their homes and the kind of lifestyles they have, that you realize, well, maybe my life isn't so normal. My life is maybe a little different from the girl next door. When did you become mindful that your family was just a little different?
You know, not, oh boy, I you know, not for a long, long time, because what I did is I chose friends that were just like me. You know, I chose the high risk crowd, the popular, so-called popular girls in school. Well, really, you know, we were out skipping school and smoking pot in the backfield while those silly people were in school studying and you know, and doing well. And so, we had, the crowd I hung out with was very much like me, and their lifestyle was much like mine, and their home life was much like mine. So to me, that was all very normal. I really rejected, quote unquote normal people. I found them somewhat boring, because by this time I am also addicted to the chaos, the drama, and the lifestyle.
What occurred, Laura Lee, when you became pregnant? What happened in the roles that you both took on? Because you were both 17, 18,
right?
You know, with issues already. Now, was there an addiction with alcohol already at this time for both you and the father of your child?
No, for me, I would say I had I really had smoked a little bit of pot and occasionally drank by that age. He was fairly heavily into marijuana, and what happened when I got pregnant is he moved away across provinces. So I didn't see him much. In my own home, my father had quit speaking to me. He wouldn't even look at me. And
now,
why did
your dad stop speaking? Was it because of the pregnancy?
Yeah, because that was a horrible reminder in his house. He was a very well-known man you think growing up in alcoholic homes, you're coming from poor homes, but most are highly functional.
Oh, not at all.
Successful.
Yeah. Not at all. Addiction and any sort of issues happens in any household.
That's right. That's right.
You know, it there's no difference at all. It doesn't have a certain face. So you were kind of alienated from your family by your father, which is unbelievable for a 17-year-old girl to have to experience that. And at the most vulnerable time of your life when you're expecting a baby.
It was, when I look back, I don't know how I did that time. What I did is I crawled inside myself and shut down. And I nurtured a relationship I thought I was having on the inside with the baby. My boyfriend left. My father didn't talk to me around. When I started to really show and it became obvious, my friends didn't really want to hang out, because that's a pretty brutal reminder. It's not that some of them hadn't got pregnant, but none of them had chosen to keep it full term.
Well, even a lot of parents will look at your home and look at, wow, she's 17 and expecting a baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, in those, today it's different, but,
right.
You know, in those days, everyone seemed to think it was contagious.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you were shunned.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a very shameful experience. So I think probably something inside of me definitely all these hurts accumulated along the way. And when I'd had this baby, I realized, you know, within a few months, and my mom was wonderful.
But your boyfriend moved away. So
any
male relationship that you had, did you kind of alienate you? Am I on the right path? Your boyfriend moved out. Why did he move out? And you were were you sharing a place, the two of you? Okay.
No, I still lived at home. I was still going to high school.
Did they take him in?
No, they didn't like him at all.
Okay.
No, they, as a matter of fact, they were, I thought they were cruel, but when my child was born, they really insisted I have him with my last name. And looking back, that was a really smart move, because that man just took off. I never really saw much of him other than he'd show up every 4 or 5 years to create a little chaos and then go off again.
Wow. Yeah. So in your child's life, he has not been a present figure.
No.
Okay. So you raise this baby. And
yeah.
who is there for support to you?
Well, I met another man because that's what you do.
Uh-huh.
And I met another man. At least that's what I did.
And how old was your son at the time of this the start of the next relationship?
Yeah, he was a baby. He probably would have been maybe 10 months old. This man was gone when I was just pregnant, and he would have been about 10 months old. So, and mm-hmm. the fellow I met was still in high school with me. So you can just imagine. We got married just when he turned 19.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's coming in. There's a family, kids raising children.
Yes, children raising children.
How, and obviously you were friends. And how did that start? That's an interesting start. I don't know many young men. I have a son who's a young man who would want to take on such responsibility.
Yeah, I don't think many would, and particularly when they're 17, because that's how old he was.
And why did he take on this responsibility?
Well, he was in love with me, and at least that's what we thought. You know, how do you know what love is if you've never had it? When you're in it, you think that's what it is. You know, and so we moved in together. We raised this child when he was 3. We got married. We produced another child when I was around 23. For a while we did all right. We actually did all right. We had a home, and he worked and I worked, and we raised the kids the best we could, and we probably had a fairly normal
family. It sounds like everything we hope and wish for. Yes,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Except for I had never treated the wounds inside of me, and left untreated, they fester, and they are patient. And what happens is you develop a pattern of self-sabotage. When things mm-hmm. start going well, it'll appear again.
I do believe that. I do believe if you don't heal what's deep inside your core. But the issue with that, Laura Lee, is a lot of people don't. It's scary to go within ourselves. We
it's
don't want
scary,
to deal
scary.
With the pain, deep down within. And that's why you have so many people out there in every single relationship. It just seems to end the same exact way.
Exactly.
Right?
And so what I've become is an emotional cripple. And what that means is I was fearful of my feelings. I was very unaware of my feelings, and I would use other people, places, and things to medicate or make those feelings feel better.
So, did mom and dad come back into the picture when there were signs of a normal household, strong relationship? And everything was on the up and up, and it looked like you had a wonderful future ahead of you.
They did. I remember one key moment for me is I was still at home, and I didn't realize I had thought not only did my father, was he completely disgusted with me, I thought he didn't like my child either, but I'll never forget one crystal clear moment, and I can still see it. I was doing dishes. I don't know where my mom was, and I was looking out the kitchen window into the back garden, and my dad was there with my son, who was probably about 18 months old. He was just adorable, bright blonde hair, blue eyes, the cutest little guy you've ever seen. He was throwing them up in the air and laughing out loud, and so was my son, and I started bawling at the sink. And it occurred to me, oh my God, he loves this kid. And that mm-hmm. was like a shock. And I never told him I saw that.
Sometimes we can be too proud to show our true emotions.
That's right. So mm-hmm. he could be safe with that little boy
mm-hmm,
and
sure.
show his emotions there. But he couldn't to me. All he could do to me was shun me and not talk to me. And I think in his mind, he thought that was a lot better than what he really wanted to say to me.
Right.
He knew how to, his anger would come out very explosive with a lot of belittling, judgment, and name-calling. And so in his mind, that was not talking to me was probably better than what he really wanted to do.
So that is what you grew up with. How did you handle your conflicts with your boyfriends? with a father of your children?
I ran from them. I did exactly what he did. If we got into conflicts, I would point my finger and shame and belittle and call them down. It was awful. That's what I knew how to do, and I was completely unaware of it because when I got into conflict, I seriously thought it was the other person's fault. When you haven't developed a sense of self-awareness, you're not able to see your own behavior.
It's all about being self-aware. If we want to go there.
If we even know how, right? How
right.
Do you go
well,
there
right.
If you've never
That's
been
right.
Taught?
That's right. Not wanting to deal. So you're in a relationship now, and it just seems normal and happy. Mm-hmm. Your parents are back in your lives, and you have these two wonderful children.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Well,
was
what happened is
also an abuser as far as abusing you and being abusive. Was he?
No, he's a great guy. What happened is, and he's young. Keep this in mind. I find out around 5 years into the marriage that 2 weeks into the marriage, he slept around with a stripper of all things, and so that just inflamed that hurt again, and off we went. And so I played the get back at you game.
Well, we talk about trust so much on this show, and you know, that's what makes starting relationships so tough. But, you know, we all want to be in a relationship, most
of
us.
We all want to, don't we?
But the issue is to be in a normal, healthy relationship, we must trust. You have to let, you know, your guard down to let somebody in, honestly. So,
but
obviously, you have trust issues. How did you find out that he was carrying on with strippers?
Well, my girlfriend had told me, and I didn't believe her, and eventually he mm-hmm. came clean and told me, and because I didn't have the words to tell him how much that hurt me, I remember going into a little ball inside myself and going mute, and that old way I coped with pain was I'd shut down for a while, then I'd get very angry and I'd get back at you. So I would go out and think I'm going to do the same thing, only I couldn't quite bring myself to do it. But, mm-hmm. you know, so we started playing this, you know, I'd go out one night and not come home, and then he'd go out and not come home, and it just started getting mm-hmm. awful. We were together for 13 years. He's a great guy. There's nothing, you know, it's not his fault.
You were also very, very young.
We were.
Kids raising children.
Knew how to cope with this. We really didn't. We both came with baggage. We mm-hmm. didn't know that. We couldn't see it. We hadn't been taught, mm-hmm. You know, and we did the best we could. And for some time we did okay. And we certainly tried to mm-hmm. love each other, but we just didn't have the tools. And I think if you don't have the tools, you're not ever going to have a successful relationship.
Well, something we often hear about is guys are not great communicators. So for the fact that you tell me that he came clean, and told you the truth is something we don't seem to hear a lot.
Well, he came clean because he kind of had no other choice. He was caught. but
even when that occurs, Laura Lee, it doesn't mean that they have to come clean.
That's right. Yeah.
So you talked about it. And what happened after that? What were the next steps to rebuild this kind of disrepair? Here it is. You have children, you're young parents, you're newly married. How did you rebuild this?
Well, I did the geographical cure. I ran to another city, got another job, brought my two little children with me, and started working in the bars.
Okay, so you left the marriage.
And he stayed in his town, and I stayed there, and we had a separation. And, you know, and I got a lot of attention from men. And I remember liking the way that felt. I was an attractive young woman mm-hmm. who worked in the bars and got a lot of attention from men. So now I'm getting my needs met that way. And I'm also angry, so I'm kind of don't like them very much either. So I'm not treating them very nicely. Mm-hmm. I'm hurt inside. I'm one of those walking wounded and don't even know it. And I make it all about what I look like and what I drive and what I do for a living.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's easier to work with. Is to just work on the exterior and how someone makes us feel. And you were very, very young, you know, so how would you know and have the skill set to even know what the issues really are at hand, especially, you know, the way you grew up? We're going to take a quick break, Laura Lee, and when we come back, I want to talk some more about what were the next steps that you took in getting your life back on track or not. Back in a moment.
Hi. I'm Andrew Goodstein, and I'm the founder of Essential Edibles, and I've created a way to a healthier lifestyle. If you're looking to lose weight, have more energy, and an overall improved lifestyle, a healthy body is and always starts with detoxifying and cleansing our body of harmful and foreign toxins. These days, toxins hamper the immune system, causing premature aging and contributes to illness and disease. The foundation of a healthy life, pure and raw energy, begins with our hygiene. If it is not digestible, it accumulates in our system. If you want to look younger, have more energy, and feel great, this two-week commitment to use this product is a huge step towards your health and well-being. The premium ingredients that are contained in this supplement are based upon an ancient Thai method of detoxification. If you follow this program and stick to your detox schedule, I promise you, you will see fabulous results. Go to EssentialEdibles.net and make the commitment to a healthier lifestyle now. EssentialEdibles.net.
Novello Salon is the premier destination for creative hairstyling since 1996. Our stylists continually train in new cut and color techniques, delivering fresh, trendy styles as well as classic looks, all in a comfortable and friendly atmosphere. Visit NovelloSalon.com and sign up for our free VIP club and receive $5 off your first visit. Novello Salon is located next to Limoncello Restaurant on Route 113 in Chester Springs. Call today for your complimentary consultation, 610-363-5777.
Are you lacking the energy to get your daily chores done? Do you feel tired, exhausted? You just don't look yourself? Well, I tell you what, let me give you a little piece of information that's great. I discovered something pretty cool for myself. It's called Essential Edibles. And what it is a 14-day detox. Now, you can do this in 7 to 10 days, but I chose for maximum results to do 14 days. I did it. It was great. And I tell you what, it was easy. I started with 2 probiotic supplements in the morning, a shake, a healthy salad for lunch, a healthy salad for dinner, and a shake. The reason why I did this is because I was tired all the time. I was exhausted. And this is a detox. So imagine all year long, we eat fast foods, you know, the air that we breathe. It just seems to be inevitable that toxins get into our system. So here's a great way to clean out our system. Spring clean your bodies. 14-day detox, essential edibles. You can eat on this, plenty of organic vegetables and fruit, and it just makes you feel good. So if you're feeling tired and having a hard time getting your energy going, you want to feel healthier. You'll have more energy, clear skin, and shiny hair, then this is for you. Andrew Goodstein, founder of Essential Edibles, is giving you the $250 14-day detox for just $99. Go to EssentialEdibles.net now, and in the promo code, type in New Life in all caps to get your $99 14-day detox today, just in time for summer.
Hi, I'm Dr. Stephen Monaco with A Foot Above Podiatry. My specialty is podiatric medicine. I provide medical diagnosis and treatment of foot and ankle problems, such as bunions, heel pain, hammer toes, neuromas, ingrown toenails, warts, corns, and calluses. I also render care of sprains, fractures, infections, and diabetic foot care and all injuries of the foot, ankle, and heel. We provide full services on-site, from x-rays to emergency care. We also have our own state-licensed ambulatory surgery center on-site. All of our services are provided on-site and are very convenient for all of you. We have the highest expertise in all aspects of foot and ankle problems. Change your life. Call me, Dr. Monaco, at 610-446-1392 or go to afootabovepodiatry.net to schedule your appointment today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bear This and That. I'm your host, Cynthia DeLeonardo. We have in the studio Laura Lee Rosano, and we're talking today about addiction and relationships and what addiction does to relationships. It can be a lifelong, hard journey. Laura Lee is talking to us about it, and on the up note, she is 17 years in recovery. So it's a wonderful thing, and she's been terrific enough to come on today and share her story. Lorelei, welcome back. And if you want to call and ask Lorelei a question, feel free to do so. The number here is 610-664-4100. Lorelei, welcome back.
Thank you.
So where we left off, we were talking about, okay, so you moved out, separated from your husband. And it's unfortunately when we have dysfunction in ourselves that we haven't taken the time to heal or even know how, especially you at such a tender age, we try to fill that void with people.
Absolutely.
And a lot of women do it with men.
Yeah.
So you were doing it with men, putting the Band-Aid on with men and alcohol. So,
yeah.
Again, here we are. Now, were you making the same mistakes with men and picking the same man every time? Now, because you do say really nicely that the gentleman that you were married to is a great guy.
He is. And he, you know, I don't want to, you know, leave him looking like the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a role in this, and I'm prepared to be responsible for my role. I know he does too, but I'm not gonna, you know, certainly it would have been very difficult to live with me. He was very young. I had a tongue that could really slice people because that was my
mm-hmm.
weapon.
It was what you were accustomed to, and it's the only
right.
way you knew how to fight back.
That's the only way I knew how to do it. So it would have been difficult. And you know, can you imagine living with someone that, you know, I just didn't have that sense of self, and I had a skewed idea
most
of reality.
Most of us don't.
You know?
Most of us don't. And most of us don't start to get that until we mature, you know, many, many, many years later. But that takes a skill as well. That means we've become self-aware. We've had experiences to bring us down that path. And I just wanted to touch lightly, Lorelei. You said something. You said, I don't want to make him out the bad guy. Let me just put it all out there. Nobody's the bad guy here.
That's right.
Nobody has to walk in those shoes here because you are an innocent child. I always say, you know what, children and animals, they don't ask to be here. They get here, and we grow up in the homes that we grow up in, and we don't have a choice, right? You've always said, you can't pick your parents, right?
No.
So here you are. You did the best that you knew how. You did the only thing that was normal to you. And
that's right.
The same with your husband. He was as young as you, and here you are both together with the same sorts of, you know, dysfunctional history and track record possibly at home.
Yeah, he didn't have quite the track record I did. His family was really supportive.
Okay, that's great. That's great to hear.
So where
we are here is... So you've repeated this pattern of picking men who possibly are the wrong men because they gave you attention physically, correct?
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, as my illness grew, and of course I wasn't aware of this, I've actually found some type of power, believe it or not, in hurting men. And so this is a glimpse of how sick we become. We don't need the alcohol or drugs. This is what is a thinking illness. This is an emotional illness.
Mm-hmm.
This is a behavioral illness. You know, so this isn't really an illness about drugs or alcohol. It's about all those other things.
I want you to really clarify here. I want to go back a little bit because, you know, every week we analyze relationships and why they work the way they do and why do we have these issues in the first place. So when you said that you got into a mind frame of hurting men, so you were hurting, was it that you were really hurting your dad?
Well, I didn't
each
know what
time
I was
someone
doing.
Came in.
Well, I think who I was hurting was me,
mm-hmm.
But I wasn't aware of that. So I'll give you an idea. If a guy really, really liked me, the more he liked me, the less respect I would have for him. Now, what I know years later.
All right.
That
so a good guy, did not get the respect. So did the bad boy get the respect?
Yeah, because he wouldn't have treated me like the good guy. The good guy would have been, you know, respectful in things. And a guy, and when you don't have respect for yourself, you're certainly not going to appreciate or even understand that. So those are, you know, and I got into some relationships with some pretty sick characters. And then I met my husband now. And, you know, and he was the first guy that stood up after 2.5 years that said, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And he left. Mm-hmm.
All right. So you met another good guy.
I met another guy in a bar.
And obviously he loved you enough to stay. Okay. So he loved you enough to stay. But there was a breaking point even for him. What was his breaking point with you?
Well, he loved me enough to leave.
He stayed for 2 years, right?
Yeah. And his breaking point was he said he didn't care how I was going to live, but he was not going to live like this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I knew he meant it. And without him, I couldn't. He was the one paying for the rent and putting the food on the table and you know, ultimately getting the drugs. You know,
when you say drugs, and what was happening at this time?
Alcohol, cocaine, pills, anything, you know, I could, by this time I couldn't get out of bed without it. It had gotten that advanced. Addiction is a progressive and terminal illness. It does get worse over time.
And was he also a user?
Yeah, he was also a user.
Okay.
Not as much as me, so we always thought it was me with the problem, but he was certainly there when I was using too. As a matter of fact, when I got out of treatment, he came in. And so he went through this treatment center, the Edgewood Treatment Center, too. And we're both 17 years clean.
Was that the sobering moment for you, though, when he decided to leave? Because he was the caretaker.
Yes.
Was that the moment that you... What happened in that moment?
Well,
what
at that moment, I just became willing to make the call. My dad had said, you know, if you ever want help, I'm going to do it, but don't call me for anything else. So Dave, who's my husband now, walked me to a payphone because we had lost everything by this time. I made the call. I said, I'm ready. I was in treatment the next day with my two overweighty plastic bags. And in my mind, I was going to leave in 3 days, but at least Dave would understand I did my part now. He needs to pay for the rent, you know. So it was all about me trying to manipulate the system. And again, I, for the first time, I came in here and I couldn't manipulate anything. And so I decided to play their game. You know, they kept making these suggestions, do this, do this, do this. And so I thought, I'm going to do everything I'm told here because my main goal was to get the hell out. And maybe, you know, I wasn't going to use cocaine anymore, of course, but I might go have a beer. So for 3 weeks, I did everything I was told here because I thought maybe they'd let me go earlier. And all of a sudden, one day I was on a walk with my peers. And I started to notice the wind on the back of my neck and that bark was swirling and the grass was vibrantly green and something inside of me woke up that hadn't been awake for a very long time. I started crying. I thought it was hallucinating. Like, I hadn't seen that ever. And I realized on that day my spirit woke up and I wanted to live. But I wasn't able to get myself there. I needed people to steer my thinking.
Absolutely. And we, you know, and I think with anything that you do in life, we can't go it alone.
There needs to be whether
it's one person or a lot of people who are behind you in support. It's so important to have some sort of support. And no matter what you do, but with this, you know, I would think that, it's absolutely necessary. You can't 100%. Walk it alone. So your husband is also at Edgewood. What was his success?
He's 17 years clean and sober, too. As a matter of fact, last night he just went to his meeting and got his 17-year medallion. So, you know, and we've raised children.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And that little boy I had so young had a little boy, and that little boy is now 17 on the honor roll, graduating in a few days.
So
I know our family life is amazing. I'm not this. I've had two lives in one body, and all that hurt. You know,
it's
Ernest Hemingway says it best: "We are strongest in our broken places." And there's so much hope when you know, or you have someone to teach you and lead you in the right direction.
You found it, though. You found your way, and you know
Absolutely.
What? In your core, you wanted to be where you are today.
I wouldn't trade any of it.
Without the help or no help, you wanted to be here.
Yes, I did. And I needed all of that to get where I am today. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why you're accumulating pain and hurt. Once it's looked at, it turns into wisdom and strength and joy. Mm-hmm. And joy. We can't have that
without and joy. Ah, what a beautiful word. We don't hear that word enough. Yeah. What is your relationship like now with your dad?
It's great. My dad and I are best of friends.
Isn't that something? What did you ever imagine that you would be able to say that?
Yeah, no, I certainly didn't, and I never would think I'd want to spend time with that man. I spent my life running, and I just love it when we get together. And you know, and I can't expect him to do the changing now. When I'm in a relationship, I don't look at anyone else changing. I look at changing me.
Good for you.
Because that's where it starts, right? I can always
absolutely. You have to want to do it. That is where it starts.
And the
second phase would be making sure you have the right people around you to get that done. We're coming to a close on the show, Laura Lee. But before we go, can you share a life-saving piece of advice for someone who is possibly in your position?
Yeah, what I think is so very necessary, whether you believe it or not, we have a saying, fake it till you make it. Start right now. Say you are worthy, you are lovable, you are precious, you are priceless. Fight for yourself and start that right now. Start that language in your head every single day, 5 minutes a day. Tell yourself how much you love yourself and that will start to change.
That's beautiful. And where can folks buy Jagged Little Lies? Where can they find that?
So, Cynthia, I've actually written 3 books on addiction, and there's one for the kids, too. There's Jagged Little Edges, Jagged Little Lies, and Gracie's Secret. And they can get that on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Bookstrand, OmniLit. They can visit my blog and get all sorts of free information and tips at JaggedLittleEdges.com. And if anyone ever wants to talk or you just have some questions, or you're looking for resources, I'd be glad to supply that. You can call me at 1-800-683-0111.
Laura Lee, thank you. Thanks so much. On Tuesday, we have SuccessfulMatch.com. Steve Casper coming in to talk to us about the world of dating. Thanks for listening.